Nicholas, welcome to SBS Radio's Armenian program.
Thank you, Vahe. It is a pleasure to be with you.
So you're traveling to Turkey in a couple of days?
I am, actually. I am flying to Istanbul on this Thursday.
And what's the occasion?
Well, I have been invited to speak at an academic conference regarding intellectual activity and intellectual output and intellectuals in a broader sense in the Zap Basin. So the Zap Basin is the area constituting the eastern part of Van Province, going down to Hakkari Province and into northern Iraq. And it was an area inhabited by Assyrians, by Kurds, by Armenians, especially in the areas of Gavar and Ahbak. So the conference is being hosted by Hakkari University, and it's a new university. It's only been around, I think, for about 10 years, and it is the main university in the province of Hakkari. And I'm not sure, for people that may or may not know, Hakkari had a small Armenian population before 1915. The majority of the non-Muslims or the Christians that lived in Hakkari before 1915 were Assyrians, but there were a few Armenian villages. So what I will be speaking about is I'll be speaking about Assyrian intellectual output and literary output by people either from Hakkari or people that lived in Hakkari between the 6th century AD and the 1800s, so the 19th century. So that conference will be from the 27th till the 29th of this month, and then I've got other commitments afterwards. Now, while I'm there, I mean, I'm going to be in Istanbul for the 24th of April. Now, I know this is controversial, and you know there are certain elements of the Bolsahai community that are opposed or that are afraid to commemorate 1915, but there are some that do, and I'm going to see if there is anything happening there that I can attend. I think that's going to be very important, because I think last time we spoke, I was going to the commemoration. The centenary commemoration of 1915, and I actually managed to go to Diyarbakir and other places, Bitlis, and, you know, it was in Diyarbakir that we did that centenary commemoration.
Last time we spoke, you mentioned about taking groups to, you know, Anatolia and Hakkari. Are you still continuing with all the troubles around there?
I did it once. I must admit, I did it once. I did it in 2015 for the centenary, and I never managed to do it afterwards just because of the security situation. Now, for instance, we took 7 or 8 people in 2015, and I managed to guide them around the Hakkari area for about 2 weeks. And then after those 2 weeks, I had one of the participants who was particularly interested in going to some villages that are now in Van Province. So it was just me and him. We spent a couple of days going to some of the Assyrian villages in Van Province. Unfortunately, a few months after we'd conducted the tour, the couple of areas in Hakkari were devastated by the Turkish military because of the ongoing conflict between the government of Turkey and the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or the PKK. So, for instance, one of the cities that we stayed in, where we stayed in the hotels there in the center of the town, that was completely destroyed. So, you know, it became very difficult for us to be able to go back, especially now that the area is in a state of emergency. I tried asking one of my friends who works at the university there in Hakkari, and she said to me, look, as long as this area is in a state of emergency, I wouldn't suggest for you to bring groups down here. It's just not safe.
Last time, I think we spoke about Assyrian property in Turkey.
Yes.
Any news?
Well, there really isn't much news. Since I was in Turkey in 2014, the bishop or the metropolitan that had come to Turkey in order to engage in dialogue regarding those properties has now become the patriarch of the church. And since he is now, you know, he's moved his residence from Baghdad to Erbil in northern Iraq. He's become engaged in other more important matters. So I don't think he has yet delegated someone to go to Turkey to ask about those properties. As regards to other Assyrian churches, we have, for example, the Chaldean Catholic Church. Their patriarch, unfortunately, went to Turkey in 2015 and openly denied the genocide. And this is something that is very stigmatic for us. It's something that's very embarrassing for us as Assyrians, that one of our own patriarchs would go to Turkey and say things against the fact that the genocide happened. You know, he was saying things like, this is an old issue, it's an old matter, and we have to forget this, and, you know, if we were to hold Turks accountable to what happened in 1915, it would be like us holding Jews accountable for crucifying Jesus. And, you know, this is something that doesn't make any sense. So I don't think that he would be looking for any property for his church. Actually, there is one monastery belonging to their church, which the people living in it are trying to sell. They're trying to sell, or they're trying to give back to the original owners. But nobody from that church has made any attempt to regain that property, unfortunately. This is a monastery in Seghert, in Sirt. Mm-hmm. With regards to our other large church, the Syrian Orthodox Church, the Syriac Orthodox Church, they are now engaged in a dispute. Obviously, you know that we still have a Syriac Orthodox community in Turkey. So the Assyrians that live in Turkey, the Asoris that live in Turkey nowadays, if they're not refugees from Iraq and Syria and they're locals, they're citizens of the country, are divided into three religious groups, the smallest being the Syriac Catholic, then the next largest being the Chaldean Catholic, and then you have the largest, which is the Syriac Orthodox. And there are about 20,000. Most of them live in Istanbul. But they still have about maybe 3,000 to 5,000 that live in their villages in southeastern Turkey, in the provinces of Mardin and in the province of Şırnak. But also they have some people living in Diyarbakır and Kharpert and Adıyaman. So they are currently engaged in a legal dispute with the local authorities over one of their main monasteries. So the monastery of St. Gabriel, Mor Gabriel, which is near the city of Midyat, and has been a monastery since the year 397 AD. It's one of the oldest still functioning monasteries in the world. They are engaged in a dispute over land that has been stolen from the monastery in the last few years. And this started with a legal case from the Kurds in the surrounding villages, who basically were trying to use the monastery's lands and saying that the monastery isn't using them and these lands don't belong to them, so we need to take them. And people in the government supporting that. Then you have the issue of Assyrian villages which had their land limits redrawn. Because there is a law in Turkey, I think, where if you're not using land, then it becomes forestry land. So when land becomes forestry land, then the government can take it, it becomes the government's property, and then the government can sell it to whoever it wants. So this is also happening. This is also a problem for Assyrians in Turkey, aside from the issue of church property. This is personal property. Mm-hmm.
You just mentioned the religious communities, the difference, Syriacs, Chaldeans, Assyrians. I think we raised the issue before. We have only one word, you know, Asuri.
Yes.
So what's the appropriate way to address Assyrians?
Well, the translation of that word would be the most appropriate, and the translation of Asuri is Assyrian. Unfortunately, I hesitate to call this person a colleague, even though he's in the same field. There is a lecturer at the State University of Yerevan called Arman Akopian, who recently has been saying that, not just saying this in lectures, but also teaching this to his students, also publishing this in his books and in his articles, that the Armenian word Asuri does not mean Assyrian, and that Asuri means Syrian. It means Aramaic, it means Aramean, but it doesn't mean Assyrian. And this has also been a big problem for us. There are some It's a very small minority of Armenian intellectuals and Armenian academics that are doing this. And I don't see where it's coming from. Maybe they are trying to score brownie points with Western academics who are against the whole notion of Assyrian continuity. But at the same time, for me, it's very straightforward, because in the Bible you have Assur, who is the father of the Assyrians, and the children of Assur would be Assuri. Just like you have Haik, who is the father of the Armenians, and you have Hayer, who are the Armenians. Now, the people that espouse Akopian's theory also say that, for instance, there are two separate words for Assyrian in the Armenian language. You have Assuri, which means Syrian or Syriac and doesn't really mean Assyrian. And then you have Assurestanti, which means Assyrian. But this is also like trying to nitpick between the terms Hay and Hayastansi, right? Hayastan is the land of the Hayer. Armenia is the land of the Armenians. Mm-hmm. Assurestan is the land of the Assuris. So if you're trying to say that Assureren means Syriac and it doesn't mean the Assyrian language, then okay, let's hypothetically say that the Assuris speak Assureren. What do the Assurestansi speak? Don't they also speak Assureren? You know, there are a lot of holes in their argument. It is not a solid argument, and it's not based on fact. And I think it's quite disappointing that people that should know the truth are not standing up for the truth. You know, we also have some issues with some Armenian national organizations in the diaspora, for example, in Europe, in North America, who have been seen as legitimizing groups of Assyrians that don't want to be called Assyrians. And yes, we have this problem. You know, Armenians don't have this problem. For us, it stems from sectarianism. And it's quite a complex issue. I mean, I would probably need another 2 hours to sit with you and explain it to you. But we have come to a situation where Assuris that belong to different churches want to be known by the name of that church. And that name is a little bit different to the word Assyrian. So it might be Chaldean, it might be Syriac, it might be something else. Now, there are organizations, as I said, who have been legitimizing them by recognizing them as being separate to Assyrians. And this is something that I've been speaking out against. Unfortunately, when I've been contacting these organizations, they haven't been replying to me. And that's quite disconcerting. I think the most recent example that I could cite was the ARF or the ANC in North America, which recently had the state of Ohio recognize the genocide. And not only did they recognize the Armenian genocide, but they also recognized the genocide of what they called the Assyrians and Syriacs. And I just want to know how they translate this in Armenian. Do they say the genocide of the Assuriner and the Assuriner? Mm-hmm. You know, why can't they just use one name? Why do they have to appease a side that is actually detrimental to them? Because to be honest with you, any Assyrian that does not identify as being an Assyrian is of no help to the Armenian cause, is of no help to the Armenian community, and it's like trying to lean on a stick that'll snap under you. Because most of these people that deny their identity and that have these separatist notions are actually puppets of other forces in the Middle East. So some of them may be puppets of Arabs, some of them may be puppets of Kurds or of Turks or of Iranians. You don't know. Because obviously if they are not true to their own identity, why would you want them on your side? Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for any Armenians that come across people like this, that see this, to call them out and to at least have a chat with them and say, hey, you're doing the wrong thing.
We always called you Assuri, and you are Assuri.
Exactly, and Shamiram was Assuri too.
Yeah. And what about the research institute you established?
Last month, on the 28th of March, we registered a new research institute called the Assyria Institute. And this institute is an organization that will engage primarily in academic endeavors. We are looking to publishing new books, reference works, articles, officially participating in international conferences, and maybe in the future, hopefully, organizing our own conferences, developing educational courses about the Assyrian language and Assyrian culture and history, and also maybe even, you know, delivering them to either the community here or communities around the world, obviously based on invitation. Then we also have, and this is something that's very important, we have the idea of translating work from Assyrian into English. Now, there are a lot of books that are in Assyrian that have never been published before, and we would like to publish them in Assyrian, but then there are a lot of books that need to be translated from Assyrian into English that are seminal works that are very vital reference points, especially for our more recent history, so the last 500 years, and especially the last 100 years or 200 years, and the period of 1915 to 1918. And these are just not accessible to people that don't know the language. They're even not accessible to Assyrians that don't know how to read their language. So translating them into English will definitely make them accessible, and it's something that we can work on. And, you know, I've had a lot of encouragement from Mr. Ara Sarafian in London, who's the director of the Gomidas Institute. And he has really been a good friend and a good support. And I mean, you know, I remember 3 years ago he was telling me to set up something like this. But, you know, I think the time has finally come.
Yeah, but the research institute you just mentioned, how Armenians can engage with you?
So we've started up a Facebook page. And we are looking to setting up a full website where people can contact us directly and maybe even help support us. Now, when it comes to engagement, there are different levels of engagement. So I think a lot of Armenians will be interested in finding Assyrian sources that mention them and mention what happened to them in the years 1915 to 1918, which is a very important part of your history. I know on my part, there is a website called Hushamadyan, I think, Hushamadyan Hayastan, mm-hmm. And I access it a lot because there are articles on there about Armenian communities in Kharpert or in Urfa or in other places, Diyarbakir, for instance. And I access that because I find that there's a lot of information on there about Asuris, about Assyrians, that's been translated from Armenian. And because I can't read Armenian, these sources are completely alien to me. You know, I wouldn't be able to access them otherwise. So I think there is a lot in the way of mutual exchange that can happen between our two communities so that we can rediscover our pasts together and rediscover our common heritage in Anatolia through giving each other access to our own historical records that have been made accessible in English.
Nicholas, thank you for your time, and thank you for, you know, taking the time, coming to our studios and sharing your thoughts.
It's always a pleasure to be here with our Armenian friends, Shachnor Hagalem, Vahe, and hopefully we will be speaking with you in the near future.
Once you return from your travels.
Thank you.